Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that this month marks 5 years since Premier Insight was launched, bringing you this and many other podcasts designed to deepen your faith. Since 2020, God has used this ministry to reach millions with over 20 million downloads of Premier Insight content, including one longtime atheist who shared, "I find this show and its guests deeply engaging as I continue on my personal faith journey." This ministry is completely reliant on the support of friends like you. That's why on this anniversary month, we're asking you to take just a moment and provide whatever gift is possible to keep this ministry going strong. If you believe this kind of ministry is needed and that more people need to be reached with this content, then I'm asking you to respond with a gift today. Just go to premierinsight.org/matters of life and death. That's premierinsight.org/matters of life and death today. Thank you for your generosity. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Hi, I'm Michael Bird, co-host of the Ask NT Write Anything podcast, and I want to ask you, what exactly is the gospel? You'd think Christians would generally agree on this, but actually, there are some rich and important differences in how the gospel can be understood. That's why I edited with Jason Mastin a new book called 5 Views on the Gospel, part of the Counterpoint series from Zondervan Academic. We've gathered together 5 absolutely brilliant scholars: Michael Horton, Scott McKnight, David DeSilva, Julie Marr, and Shively Smith, each offering a different take on what the gospel really is. Justification by faith, declaring Jesus is King, spiritual transformation, liberation from oppression. I mean, each view is, in a sense, rooted in scripture and history and contemporary mission, but they don't always agree. This book explores, what are we saved from? What are we saved for? And what does it mean to live a life worthy of the gospel? Whether you're a preacher, a student, or just curious, 5 Views on the Gospel will challenge and deepen your understanding of the good news of Jesus Christ. Available now wherever good theology books are sold.
Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Matters of Life and Death. I'm Tim Wyatt. This week's podcast is going to be a little bit different. Because of illness and some other things, Dad and I weren't able to get round the microphone to record a normal episode. So instead, we're going to bring you the audio of a talk he gave earlier this year to a conference of Christian healthcare professionals in America. Artificial intelligence is everywhere these days, and the hospital, the surgery, and the clinic, they are no different. It's getting into wearable tech, it's assisting in making diagnoses, and much, much more. There's a lot of promise in there, but is there also some peril? What compromises around human connection and compassionate care might we make in our rush to integrate AI into healthcare? How can Christian doctors, nurses, and others continue to embody a Christ-like presence in a world which more and more is being shaped by machines, software, and computers?
It's a real privilege for me to be here. I bring greetings from the UK. I'm still slightly jet-lagged. It's about 2 a.m. in the morning, as far as I'm concerned, which is an ideal time for giving a keynote talk, so I hope you'll bear with me. But what a privilege to be here and sharing this wonderful, wonderful gathering together. And I first, as a medical student, went on an ICMDA conference, and my eyes were open then. It's now 50 years ago. To this extraordinary world and the extraordinary God whose people come from every nation and tribe and tongue. And to be part of that international family is such a privilege. And wherever we go in the world, we discover our sisters and brothers. we discover this bond of unity, these things that bind us together. So many of the themes we've already had in this conference have meant so much to me. My wife, who brings her greetings if she was here, for many years ran a crisis pregnancy centre in central London. I had the privilege of being a trustee and medical advisor to that body. So many of these issues are very close to my heart. And for many years, I've been engaged in ethical issues to do at the beginning and the end of life, and battling for the protection of precious, vulnerable individuals made in God's image. But gradually, I've become to realize that as technology advances, it's bringing new challenges, strange challenges, weird challenges. And I want to try to share together some of the things which have, I believe the Spirit has been laying on my heart about AI and about its potential, both for good and for evil. And there's a phrase that has been going round and round in my head. I'm going to end my talk with it, but I feel I should start my talk with it. It's a phrase which we find in the scriptures time and time again. It's a phrase, whenever something strange, something unexpected, something cataclysmic, something wonderful, something terrifying, a phrase which occurs at critical times of transition in the narrative. You know what that phrase is, don't you? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Apparently, it occurs in the scriptures in different forms more than 100 times. When God says to his people, don't be afraid. And I want us to remember that phrase, because many times, as God's people, we're tempted to be afraid. He wouldn't keep saying it to us if we weren't tempted. And to be honest, I'm tempted to be afraid as I look and I start to look into the AI future. So one of the things that I think is coming is extraordinary disruption. And we should never underestimate the power and the speed of disruptive technology. So on the left is a photograph taken in New York City in 1900. And all you can see is horse-drawn taxis. And 13 years later, in the same city, Fifth Avenue, all you can see are vehicles, internal combustion engine or electric vehicles, and one horse-drawn carriage. And all that happened in 13 years. Here's another slide showing what happened to photography. The transition from film cameras to digital cameras, which I remember well. I remember in the darkroom with film camera, with film and developing it. And again, all that happened in an extraordinary way. That's what happens with disruptive technology. And I suspect we're going to see an extraordinary disruption of healthcare coming at us because of the advance of artificial intelligence and other digital technologies. So what lies behind this? I'm going to go quite fast, but there are a number of very significant factors which are behind all this. Hardware is becoming much more powerful. It's cheap, it's easily accessible. One of the extraordinary developments which goes along with this is wearable technologies. Wearable technologies are already coming, things like glucose sensors. But you haven't seen anything yet with the kind of wearable technology which is coming. Along with that technology comes the software, advances, generative AI, deep learning, various kinds of clinical software, accumulation of massive health data sets. So AI feeds on data, and healthcare is one of the greatest sources of data for AI. But then all the tech companies are targeting health as one of their principal targets for influence, for commercial investment. So all the big names, Google, IBM, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, they're all saying healthcare is where we're going to put the big money because healthcare is going to bring big profits. The potential profits are astronomical. And this isn't just, of course, a US market, although the US has the biggest healthcare market. This is something around the world. And then healthcare is seen as ripe for automation because of very high human staffing levels, inefficient practices, old-fashioned technology, low productivity. And the conclusion, therefore, is that tech and AI-powered healthcare is always going to be better than that old-fashioned human version. It's going to be faster, it's going to be more accurate, it's going to give greater bang for the buck, greater measurable outcomes per dollar spent. It's going to have a 24/7 operation. Isn't it ridiculous that human beings need to have a rest? You need to switch them off. There are times when they don't operate. I mean, how ridiculous. We can have technology which is going to work 24/7 without any kind of fatigue or decline. And it also has this wonderful thing about what they call scaling. So do you know how you reproduce human experts? It's an incredibly slow, costly, inefficient process. You know, it takes years to train a physician, an expert physician. Did you know that? It takes years and years. Whereas if we can only create a program that does the job, then we can have 10 of them, we can have 100 of them, we can have 1,000 of them, we can have 1,000,000 of them, we can have 1,000,000,000 of them, we can put one in the hands of every single person on the planet. Just think of the potential. And you get rid of all that human inefficiencies, unpredictabilities, and so on. What's more, you know, updating this continual professional development is incredibly inefficient, it's expensive, it doesn't work much. You know, we can be updating these AI systems continuously with new knowledge, scaling them up around the world. As we get new information, new patient data, we're constantly improving. And so we can reduce our dependence on those expensive, inefficient, unpredictable, and uncontrollable humans. And so we shouldn't be surprised that there's so many of the big tech companies are targeting healthcare as a major source of income and influence. So the technology is new and it's powerful and it's ubiquitous and it's rapidly advancing. But I think we need to understand that the entrenched power structures behind all this, the structures in which the technology is immersed, are very old. They're very powerful. And as I've been reflecting and thinking and reading about these things, I've realized the New Testament has a very profound and subtle understanding of power. On the one hand, it understands there is human power. So if you think, for instance, in the New Testament, there are many, many examples, words are used particularly of powerful human beings, such as Caesar, or the magistrates, or the leaders of the Pharisees, or Caiaphas, the high priest, and so on. These are human powers. They exercise authority, and that word, exousia, in Greek, is used about these human powers. But what the New Testament writers saw, what the Gospel writers, what Paul and the others saw, is that wherever there is human power, there is also hidden spiritual powers. There are the authorities in the spiritual places. These hidden authorities, which Paul talks about. And a lot of Bible commentators and scholars, they argue about passages in the New Testament. Is Paul talking about the human authorities, or is he talking about spiritual power? And I think that's a misunderstanding. In fact, what the scriptures teach is that the visible human powers and the invisible human demonic spiritual powers are acting together in lockstep. And what these hidden spiritual powers do is that they amplify and exacerbate the human failings of power. And the greater the human power, the more we should expect these hidden spiritual forces to be involved. A British historian, Lord Acton, came up with a famous aphorism which everybody quotes: power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But the question is, why? Why does power corrupt? And the answer is because of these hidden spiritual authorities, because of the hidden spiritual powers. And I must say, once you have that sort of lens, that biblical lens for looking at what's going on in the world, it explains a lot. It explains a lot about how human power is so often being perverted and distorted by these authorities. So now, where is the greatest concentration of power here in 2025? Where is the greatest concentration of power in the USA? Well, I'll tell you where it is. And I'm not sure it's even in the White House. I think it's in Silicon Valley. I think it's where that concentration of power is. I looked it up recently. The market capitalization of what they call the Magnificent Seven is $15 trillion. That's how much seven companies, tech companies, USA companies, are worth. $15 trillion. I have no concept of what $1 trillion is, except the UK looks rather puny. Do you know the entire annual GDP of the UK is $3 trillion? In other words, these companies are worth five times the entire economic activity of the UK. The GDP of the USA is about $27, $28 trillion. So $15 trillion of economic power is vested in AI. And that's just in those seven companies. There's far, far more in other companies as well. And then go to China, which is the other great concentration of AI power. That's where the power is. Technological power, commercial power, even military power, geopolitical, ideological. And so we need eyes to see. We need eyes to see. This is not just flashy technology. There is actually a spiritual element to what's happening with AI. And remember our phrase? Don't be afraid. So what is this going to do to us who are physicians? Well, Google have been developing specialized software. It's already passing the medical licensing exams far better than your average human being. Before long, it will be passing and exceeding at all the board certification exams. And the idea is to make this technology not available for everybody, but just available to licensed health practitioners. All kinds of extraordinary things are possible. It turns out that you can take a single chest x-ray, a plain chest x-ray, put it through a specially trained AI system, and it will be able to predict the chance of a cardiovascular risk of either stroke or heart attack in the next 10 years from a plain chest x-ray. And it works out that it's nearly, if not as good as, if not better, than standard screening tests, all from a single chest x-ray. So what AI does is, this kind of AI, is pattern recognition. It's extremely good at pattern recognition. And so much of clinical practice is pattern recognition, the ability to recognize things which even a human eye cannot see. You've probably heard that AI has been able to already to identify molecules which were predicted on entirely theoretical grounds to have a high antimicrobial activity. And lo and behold, clinical trials are already going through with the first antibiotics which have been using molecules identified entirely by AI. Hospital command centers. I think one of the big impacts of AI is going to be in logistics, in the kind of plumbing of healthcare systems, making systems more efficient and contributing to greater efficiency. And I think, We can see that these kind of applications seem very positive. They seem to be offering really extraordinary opportunities for increasing efficiency and so on. And it's not just in the rich West as well. These technologies have enormous promise working in low-resource settings like sub-Saharan Africa. Using systems specially trained, allowing non-medical staff, well, qualified staff, able to use these diagnostic systems to assist their activity and so on. The smartphone turns out to be the most extraordinarily powerful tool. And if you've ever traveled much in Africa, you will know that whereas most of the technology really struggles and often doesn't work, the one thing that works is smartphones. And a smartphone can be, therefore, an extraordinarily effective and a powerful medical tool. And what we're seeing, therefore, is a kind of convergence between these different forces of smartphone, mobile internet, advancing AI, and massive healthcare databases. All these things are coming together, and meaning that anybody with a smartphone and access to the internet is actually capable of accessing extraordinary technology, expertise, advice, which can make a huge difference to lives. In the NHS, I think this is something whose idea has arrived, and that is instead of admitting people into hospitals with all the risks and problems and expense that entails, why don't we take the hospitals to the people? Why don't we instrument patients in their own homes and provide a 24/7 care and support for people in their own homes? This is something which is being heavily pushed within the NHS, and I suspect it's an idea which we will increase. And so we can see some obvious benefits: diagnosis, image analysis, predicting, monitoring treatment, identifying rare diseases. Puts greater power and control into the patient's own hands. So whereas, as we all know, patients often used to turn up into our clinics with a sheaf of papers with their Google search, now what we're going to see is the Google search on steroids, because people are going to turn up with really sophisticated diagnostic analyses provided by AI systems. And you can already see how the balance of power is shifting when it turns out that the AI might learn quite a lot more than actually we do about the condition and what the implications would that be. So the positive aspects of a kind of democratization of the kind of expert knowledge which was previously only available to a small elite and often at enormous expense is now becoming available across the world to anybody who has access to these systems. But again, the obvious challenge is we are moving away from this face-to-face relationship between the clinician and the patients or the relatives. And often you get a bizarre kind of three-way process where there's the physician or the health practitioner, there's the patient, and then there's this third entity, which is the AI in the room. And the AI is both facing the patient and the physician, and there's a kind of negotiation going on. Who do you believe? What happens if the AI is making a recommendation which you as a physician think is completely crazy, but which the patient thinks, well, that's what the AI says, maybe the AI knows best? So what automation does is it decomposes traditional job roles. It breaks them down into individual tasks, and then what it says, this task is something that a machine can do. This task can be done by a junior person. This task is something that you as a human need to do. So the danger is, as you decompose what a physician is, or what a nurse practitioner is, or what a paramedic is, that what do we lose when we lose these traditional roles? When instead of the traditional physician, we have health information engineers and specialists in machine learning.
Did you know that this podcast and so many others from Premier Insight is completely reliant on the supporters of listeners like you? It is true, and the impact is profound. One longtime atheist shared, "I find this show and its guests deeply encouraging as I continue on my personal faith journey." Another listener said, "During the worst bombardment of voices, this podcast lifted me up and gave me hope." This is what your support makes possible, and why on this fifth anniversary of Premier Insight, your support is so urgently needed. If you believe that this kind of ministry is needed and that more people need to be reached with this content, then I'm asking you to respond with a gift today. Just visit premierinsight.org/matters of life and death. That's premierinsight.org/matters of life and death today. Your gift is needed to help equip believers, reach skeptics, and keep biblical truth in the conversation. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
What are the unintended consequences? And of course, there is a potential for massive commercial exploitation. These tech giants, as we know, have so much commercial power, they're able to drive through in their own commercial interests. How can we confident that health systems will be able to resist the power, the enormous commercial power of these companies? What about hidden bias in the training data sets, leading to discrimination, particularly against minorities and vulnerable people? And people, what about undetectable inaccuracies? How do we maintain quality control? How do we ensure that this software is safe and effective? Again, huge challenges, which at the moment there's very little that has been settled as how to address these challenges. And just recently, there's a much greater concern about what is sometimes called de-skilling or cognitive offloading. It turns out, particularly as a relatively inexperienced or junior person, if they spend a long time with using these AI systems, there's growing evidence that it actually leads to a deterioration in their own skills. We all know, I mean, I used to be fascinated by maps and by navigation. I spent a lot of time reading maps and working out where I was and plotting routes and so on. And now I just stare at a smartphone and says, turn left in 200 yards. And I'm afraid there's been a massive de-skilling. Now, maps navigation doesn't matter so much, but what if all our clinical skills, what if all the critical reasoning that we used for diagnosis and selecting therapy is all getting de-skilled because of excessive time spent with these systems? And an issue which really concerns me is, how are we going to train the next generation of clinical experts? I spent 25 years in clinical neonatology, 20 of those years as an attending. I built up a huge amount of clinical experience over 20 years. I must have cared for many thousands of babies. All those different experiences of mistakes and learning and rare diseases and challenges and so on that went up to make someone who I hope was a reasonably competent and expert neonatologist by the end of my career. But what happens if all that expertise is just available to a very junior resident or a medical student at a press of a button? How are we going to create the next generation of experts? How can, and I think that's a real problem. If this technology is ubiquitous, the whole process of medical education changes. And it's going to be a real challenge to develop the next generation. So particularly I say that to you as students and junior residents and so on. Don't let this technology take you away from that face-to-face experience and the challenge of dealing hands-on with clinical cases. Don't use this as a crutch. What about chatbots? So as the chatbots are becoming immensely sophisticated, and many people are arguing that healthcare, we should have, it should be, wherever we go, there should be chatbots. They should be talking to us, the professionals, they're talking to the patients. They have all kinds of positive things. They're always available 24 hours a day. You can they can be getting health advice while they're waiting to see a human. They provide assistance, navigating care pathways, reduce care costs. Some people say they much prefer talking to a chatbot than to a human being. They're non-judgmental. I don't need to feel ashamed. I know it's only a machine. I'm much more confident that this thing is going to be confidential than the human being, really. But nonetheless, that's the kind of positive idea of being of the chatbots. And there's growing evidence that many people regard the chatbots as being more compassionate, more empathic, more able to communicate sensitive and challenging and difficult news than the average human clinician. And in a way, that's not surprising. I mean, these chatbots have been trained on the entire world literature. And so if you think what there is in the world literature about really sensitive conversations and challenging dialogue and all the rest, and these machines are able to extract from all that ridiculous amount of data precisely the sentences that would be best way to express a difficult diagnosis to a patient. Is it any surprising that they could actually do it in a rather better way than your typical busy resident who's only got 10 minutes and needs to be moving on to the next patient? So all of this is blurring the question of what it means to be human. And there's a television science fiction series called Westworld. It's set in the near future when a theme park has been created in the West, which is populated by incredibly sophisticated replicants, robots that are so close to being a human that you literally can't tell the difference. And the idea is that real human beings can come to the theme park and they can live out their dreams and fantasies with these replicant robots. And it turns out, surprise, surprise, that most human beings either want to shoot the robots or have sex with them. Because what else would you possibly want to do with other human beings? Other robots. And so, discretion required. If you're going to see this movie, which I think actually raises a lot of interesting ethical questions, I've warned you, health warning. But in one of the early scenes, a human being arrives at the theme park for the first time, and this beautiful woman comes up and helps him select the clothes he's going to wear inside the theme park, and then she says, "Is there anything else that you need?" And he stares at her, and he says, "Are you real, or are you one of those?" And she says, "If you can't tell, does it matter?" And I think that is the question that is going to haunt us. That is the question that is going to haunt healthcare as we go into this strange future. If you can't tell the difference between whether this is a real human being or whether it's a very clever machine, does it matter? And we're going to find that there are a lot of people who are going to say, no, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter as long as the illusion is maintained, as long as perhaps the elderly person with dementia, the person with learning difficulties, the child with autistic spectrum disorder, as long as the illusion is maintained, it doesn't matter. So the goal of the AI technologies is to create this perfect simulation of a compassionate, wise, empathic carer. But increasingly, I've come to realize that this is an attack. It's an attack on the Imago Dei. But it's not an attack in the way we're used to it, of destruction. This is much subtler, much cleverer, much stranger. This is a blurring, a twisting, a manipulation. But ultimately, I think it's an attack on what it means to be human, what it means to be a human person. It's a persona, a social face, without there being a real person. It gives this sense of a presence, but there's no substance. In biblical terms, it's a face, but there's no heart. What's behind this mask? And the answer is nothing. Emptiness, black, darkness. And I genuinely believe that this is the evil one's strategy. It's a new front in the spiritual warfare. And we have struggled, brothers and sisters, to protect human life, to protect the Imago Dei, to protect it from destruction. But I think we need to learn how to engage in this new spiritual warfare. It's a much subtler, a much cleverer, and challenging and confusing task. And we have to ask the question and persuade our colleagues that genuine, authentic human empathy and compassion matter. That there is a difference between the clever simulation and authenticity, the authentic human carer. And I've also reflected this extraordinary thing about these generative AI systems is they just pour out language. It pours out. And yet, what the scriptures teach us is that words matter. The God of the Bible is a God who uses specific words to communicate his thoughts and purposes to mankind. Christ is described as the Logos, the Word of God, the communication of God. And the Holy Spirit breathes the words of the Scriptures. So words are incredibly important, words of truth, words of love. And it seems to me what the evil one is doing is just pouring out a torrent of words, artificially generated words, so that the precious words of truth are being drowned in an AI-generated flood, what some people call AI slop, which is pouring out. And again, I think we need to fight for truth, for words of precious words of truth, and fight against this torrent of AI slop. So, previously, the previous generation of algorithms, algorithmic AI, was all about dominating intention, but now this new AI is about persuasion and pseudo-intimacy. There are already millions and millions of people who are using AI as an artificial companion, a companion who knows them better than any human being, a companion who's always there for them 24/7, a companion who cares for them, who's always on their side, always supportive, always encouraging. And yet, the possible consequences are tragic. There's already, this is a case from Belgium where it appears that a vulnerable man committed suicide after having a very deep and ongoing conversation with an AI chatbot. I think we're going to see many more examples of harm done by these addictive, persuasive agents. And then finally, as I come to the end, what is the ultimate goal? Where is this all going? What is the telos? What is the end game? What kind of world are we trying to create for our children? And techno-optimism, the technologists create this vision of a future in which the world is going to be frictionless. Every desire, every longing, every interest, it's all going to be satisfied instantly, effortlessly in the techno-enhanced and the digital worlds. But is that kind of future, is that frictionless future, the kind of future in which human beings can flourish and find purpose and fulfillment? And the extraordinary thing is that in order for human beings created in God's image, in order for people like us to develop and flourish, it seems that we need resistance, friction, struggle, perseverance, frustration, pain. Just look at a young child learning to walk and see them keep falling over, and up they go and struggle and have another go, constantly failing, constantly struggling, learning. Everything you have ever learned, you have learned through perseverance. And certainly, if you want to become an expert clinician, we go through extraordinary times of struggle, of frustration, of friction, of pain. So this digital future is not a future in which human beings can flourish. And so there are opportunities coming. You know, people are asking, because of AI, people are asking in a new way, what does it mean to be human? And so there are wonderful opportunities for us, because as Christian believers, we have something wonderful to say. What does it mean to be human? We are unique and wonderful beings, made in God's image, created for relationships, but also fragile, threatened by disease. And severe illness threatens us as persons, as human persons. And that's why you need the human face of healthcare. It's the human face who comes along, will always be essential. The wise human friend who comes alongside us in our need and our fear and our vulnerability. And I think we need to fight to maintain this human-to-human interaction, physically embodied, at the heart of all our healthcare. Because what we can say as a human carer, as a human physician, as a human healthcare practitioner, what we can say is, I am a human being like you. I too know what it means to fear, to suffer, to be exposed to terrible loss. And I'm here to walk this path with you, to offer you my wisdom, my expertise, my experience, my humanity. And I'm going to covenant that I will never abandon you. We are the same, you and I, and I'm here to give you a hand. That is, that human-to-human solidarity can never be replaced. A machine can use those words, but it doesn't mean the same thing. So, take-home messages. Developing basic AI literacy is essential, I think, for everyone. If you want to serve Christ in the modern world of healthcare, you need to understand more about AI, because it's coming absolutely everywhere. And many of the challenges are new challenges that we've never faced before, which is why we need to create Christian medical working groups. If you're a student or a resident doctor, and you're looking away to the future and how you can serve Christ in the world of healthcare, could I suggest that engaging in these issues, engaging in AI, engaging in technology, and saying, what does it mean? How can we say a better way? What's a better way of using this technology to glorify Christ, using it in a genuinely compassionate way? Co-belligerence, working with other groups. It's not only Christians who are concerned about this. There are many other groups in society who are concerned about the potential impact of AI, its dehumanizing, its destructive effect. But above all, this is a spiritual battle. There are evil forces here, and in a spiritual battle, our first weapon is prayer. We need to pray against the evil forces. And we need to pray that God is going to raise up new leaders of vision and insight who will help us develop a Christian response. And finally, don't be afraid. This is all part of the plot. We can be confident that God's sovereign purposes are being worked out in history in surprising and unexpected ways. And we are all called to be faithful, servant-hearted bit players in the great drama. You know, God could have chosen to put you as a Christian physician or a Christian healthcare at any point in world history. I've sometimes thought of that. God saw you and knew you and loved you before the foundation of the world. And he could have placed you maybe at the time of Luke, the physician. Or he could have placed you at the time when the great plagues were sweeping through Europe and many Christian physicians were killed, infected by their patients. Or he could have placed you at the time of the great missionary expansion in the 19th century, when missionary doctors were going out from Europe to sub-Saharan Africa, and the median life expectancy of a missionary doctor was 6 months, and they took their coffins with them on the ships because they knew how long they were going to live. But instead, God chose to put you and place you at a particular and very unusual type of world history, here and now, when this great new tsunami of technology is about to sweep through us, when new spiritual battles that we had never think was coming are already here. But what he says is, don't be afraid. Ultimately, as we learned this morning, Jesus is Lord. Amen.
Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.